Vandam Tungito Dhruvo Mahabhagavato Mahamati Arosavavre Chalitam Smritim Yaya Eratyayatim Duratyam Tamaha. Okay, Maitreya Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Saha he Raja Rajena by the King of Kings Kuvera Varaya for a benediction Koditaha being asked Dhruvaha Dhruva Maharaj Mahabhagavataha a first class pure devotee Mahamatihi, most intelligent or thoughtful. Haro, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saha, he, Vavre, asked, Achalitam, unflinching, Smritim, remembrance, Yaya, by which Tarati crosses over Ayatnena without difficulty Duratyayam unsurpassable Tamaha nescience. Translation in purple by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great sage Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, when thus asked to accept a benediction from Kuvera, the Yaksharaj, king of the Yakshas, Dhruva Maharaj, that most elevated pure devotee, who was an intelligent and thoughtful king, begged that he might have unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For thus a person can cross over the ocean of nescience very easily, although it is very difficult for others to cross. Purport. According to the opinion of expert followers of Vedic rites, there are different types of benedictions in terms of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. These four principles are known as Shatavagas. Of all the Shatavagas, a benediction of liberation is considered to be the highest in this material world. To be enabled to cross over material nescience is known as the highest purushartha, or benediction for the human being. But Dhruva Maharaj wanted a benediction which surpasses even the highest purushartha liberation. He wanted a benediction that he might constantly remember the lotus feet of the Lord. This stage of life is called Panchama Purushartha. When a devotee comes to the platform of Panchama Purushartha, simply engaging in devotional service to the Lord, the fourth Purushartha liberation becomes very insignificant in his eyes. Srila Prabodhananda Sarasvati has stated in this connection that for a devotee, liberation is a hellish condition of life. As for sense gratification, which is available in the heavenly planets, the devotee considers it to be a will-o'-the-wisp, having no value in life. Yogis endeavor to control the senses, but for a devotee, controlling the senses is no difficulty at all. The senses are compared to serpents, but for a devotee, the serpent's poison teeth are broken. Thus, Srila Prabodhananda Sarasvati has analyzed all kinds of benedictions available in this world, and he has clearly declared that for a pure devotee, they are all of no significance. Dhruva Maharaj was also a Mahabhagavat, or a first-class pure devotee, and his intelligence was very great, Mahamatihi. Unless one is very intelligent, one cannot take to devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Naturally, anyone who is a first-class devotee must be a first-class intelligent person, and therefore not interested in any kind of benediction within this material world. Dhruva Maharaj was offered a benediction by the King of the Kings. Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, whose only business is to supply immense riches to persons within this materialistic world, is described as the King of Kings, because unless one is blessed by Kuvera, one cannot become a king. The King of Kings personally offered Dhruva Maharaj any amount of riches, but he declined to accept them. He is described therefore as Mahamatihi, very thoughtful or highly intellectual. Okay, we'll just say Mangalacharya. Amagyanatamarandasya gyananjana shalakaya Chakshum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam Vandeham shri guru shri yutapadakamlam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana ragnatam vitam tvam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajnasaitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakambitam Sha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radhakanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpatrubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Canto 4, Chapter 12, Text Number 8. So, Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, and he's explaining that Kuvera has made an offering. Okay? Rather, Dhruva Maharaj has asked this benediction from Kuvera. He has asked that he have unflinching faith and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's explained in this verse, for thus a person can cross over the ocean of nescience very easily, although it is very difficult for others to cross. Okay. So first of all, requesting the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, especially my worshipable elders in the room, so we can speak something that will be pleasing to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. It's a very interesting place in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is a very powerful literature for a various number of reasons. One of the reasons why the Bhagavatam is so powerful is that it explains the psychology of pure personalities. What is being brought out here, for example, is the great intelligence of the great souls. Dhruva Maharaj has been asked to take any benediction, and he's asked for a specific thing here. It says, Dhruva Maharaj, that most elevated pure devotee, who was an intelligent and thoughtful king. Very, very specific point. He's intelligent and thoughtful, and then we're hearing what he has asked for. What that means actually is that someone who is very intelligent and very thoughtful, there is a particular quality to what they request. What has he requested? Unflinching faith and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it goes further than that. This verse also explains what happens by having it. Very, very interesting. It says here, for thus a person can cross over the ocean of nescience very easily. This is instructive. Literally everything that we do and everything that we take shelter of is because we have a need in this world. So for example, people will take shelter of money. Right? So this verse is talking about, you know, the fact that, or this purple is talking about the fact that Kuvera, being the treasurer, can give unlimited amounts of wealth. Why do people want money? Did you ever think about that? Why is it that people spend so much time and so much energy endeavoring for material resources? It is for the two purposes, actually. It is for the purpose of controlling and enjoying. Right? In this world, we want to control and we want to enjoy. Okay, if I have wealth, I'll be able to get a certain level of control. Okay, I can buy certain things. I can buy resources. I can buy experiences. And by controlling those resources and experiences, I will be able to enjoy. Okay, so that's one thing. People want so many things in this world, various opulences. Why? Because actually, the material energy itself is a harsh experience. What unites the human family, many things unite the human family. One of the things that unites all of us is that as long as we're in the material world, we're vulnerable. Every single one of us, as long as we exist in this world, we are vulnerable. Your happiness, your stability at any point in life in this material world can come under attack. And we're conscious of it sometimes. Sometimes we're unconscious of it. Prabhupada makes this statement, we must become conscious before we can become Krishna conscious. It's a very interesting statement. It's a very interesting statement because most people on the planet right now, most living entities on the planet right now, we live unconsciously. We act unconsciously. So, for the most part, when you ask people why they do what they do, they can't tell you the real reason. They can give you a superficial answer, but because of many of our drives are beneath the surface, we can't really explain deep down what's driving our behaviors. What unlocks the life of a living person, what brings life from the unconscious to the conscious level of awareness, is exactly what's being spoken of in this verse. A very thoughtful and intelligent king. A very thoughtful and intelligent person can start to inquire, why am I here? Why do I act the way that I do? What triggers me? What's behind the particular activities that I'm doing? So in London, where I work, a friend of mine lives nearby. I mean, actually, he works nearby. So our offices are very near to each other. So sometimes we get together in the morning before work and we will just chant. And we were going for a japa walk. And as we were walking around the area, it's a business area, so they have all these different skyscrapers, like big tall buildings. And as we're going around the area, there are many corporate professionals who also, because they work in the area, they come to work early. They'll come into the office in their suit, tie, whatever, and they'll change into their sports gear, right? Their sports clothing, right? So they'll wear their, you know, their tracksuit bottoms, whatever it is, and they'll go for a run before work. So we were on a walk, and we were just watching these different professionals on the run, okay? And it was very interesting, because if you ask them what they're doing, they're going to tell you, we're just trying to keep fit. And as we were walking, I was just looking at them, and something struck me. And it's something that's very, very interesting that we can all use in our life. What I saw was that, yeah, these people, if you ask them what they're doing, they're going to tell you we're keeping fit, right? You know, keeping our body in shape, keeping fit. That's the conscious answer. That's the conscious narrative. But the unconscious narrative is that I'm scared of death. I'm very fearful of death. I'm very fearful that my body is growing old. And this activity that I'm doing is my attempt to hold back from the inevitable. I don't want to grow old. I don't want to be diseased. I don't want to experience old age. And definitely, I do not want to die. Right? Our lives, in many cases, are a life unexamined. So therefore, on one level, we have these explanations about what we do, but if we explore deep down, we'll see that there's another driver. There's a very different driver that's pushing us. And as long as we have those drivers, those unconscious fears, it damages our ability to experience life on a higher level. But there's a solution to that difficulty. There's a solution to that difficulty. I was actually speaking to a friend recently. We had some friends, devotees, who came over for dinner. And as we were discussing, they were young ladies. So they're friends of my wife. So the whole family came to our house for dinner. Actually, no, we went to their house. And one of the things that was being discussed was the increasing use of plastic surgery. Right? So you hear about that, right? So before, it was just a few elite people who could afford to have plastic surgery. So they would go and have their face changed or their body changed in some way, shape, or form. But increasingly, as the surgery became cheaper, right? So that's one side. The surgery became cheaper, and at the same time, as there's more and more media emphasis on how you have to look a certain way, your body has to have a certain shape, we were seeing that people were becoming more and more insecure. More and more insecure, more and more fearful, again, fear of how they look. Will they be accepted? Will people validate me? Which is very interesting. Am I going to get validated? And then the next question comes, what can I do? What do I need to do so that I get attention from people? I feel good about myself. People appreciate me. People will say nice things about me. And this was causing people to have to save money and to go for all kinds of different plastic surgery. Again, plastic surgery on the body generally, what does that mean? I don't want to, these wrinkles are starting to appear on my face. Old age, I want to keep this away as much as possible, right? I want attention, I want people to validate me. Again, based upon this underlying fear or insecurity. Insecurity. So we often live life unconsciously. And in many cases, we're not even so consciously aware of what's driving our behavior. But when we start to come to Krishna consciousness, then something very powerful happens. Then, as with Dhruva Maharaj, we become thoughtful. We become thoughtful and we start to think, why do I do what I do? Why do I speak the way that I speak? Why is it that when this devotee does this, why is it I feel I get triggered? Why is it I react in a certain way? Because many of the things that we experience are beneath the surface. And as we go deeper, we start to realize that we have certain needs that cannot be fulfilled by the material world per se. It's a very interesting thing. If you go on this journey, if you start to explore your own consciousness, your different thoughts, your different feelings if you go on the journey and you follow them back into the heart. Every one of us will see that when we go along the journey of our thoughts, our feelings, and our emotions, we come to transcendental needs. Every single one of us, we have transcendental needs that cannot be fulfilled by the material world. I was observing over the last couple of days the different guests that came to the temple. And I was observing the hospitality that was given to them by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj and the other residents of this place. And I was observing the power of that interaction, that hospitality and so on. And I'm always trying to understand what's beneath it. Why does something work? The day I got initiated, my spiritual master made a joke about me. So my legal name was Eddie. My friends would all call me Eddie. So my spiritual master said, "Buck to Eddie, he wants to know everything." Right? And it's actually true. I'm always trying to understand how does this really work? What makes something really powerful, effective? What makes it work? And then I had a discussion with one of my God family, and this point was made about care. And I was reflecting on it, and I was thinking, yeah, because what we're doing is we're fulfilling a need. We're fulfilling a need. And when those needs are fulfilled, then people feel complete, and then they can move from where they are in order to go towards the destination that they are meant to be coming towards. So when the living entities in this world, when all of us in an increasingly vulnerable position, in a world and in a mentality which is all around survival of the fittest in many cases, I want to survive. And if that means that I have to do something against you to get what I want, then so be it. And this is how many people think. I spoke to one person recently who was talking about how she wanted to get out the corporate environment because she said it's so cutthroat. So people are just trying to take you out. And they don't mind if they can lie about you, take benefit for work you've done, manipulate whatever it is so that they can get what they want. So this idea of being cutthroat and ruthless is there. Therefore, people are very vulnerable. So people are very struck and very stunned when they come into an environment where a core human need is being met well, is being met consistently, and is being met sincerely. So there's no ulterior motive. We just want to serve. We just want to give. And that is something, that interaction is a language that speaks across all cultures, all races, all genders, all generations, every single aspect of humanity. Because it speaks to something universal within the heart of every individual. We have certain fundamental needs. And when you see people flourish, when you see people grow, when you see people really become all that they can be, really become what they are meant to be in all of their divine glory, we can understand that their needs are being met. But the journey does not stop there, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, everyone is going for certain needs. Everyone. Whether it's your ruthless criminal or it's your saintly individual, everyone is going to or is pursuing their needs. The difficulty is that we pursue our needs in different modes. We pursue our needs in different modes. So, for example, I was speaking to one person. He's a really great guy. He's a friend of mine. But he told me that where he grew up, when he was young, I can't remember if it was his parent or someone else, said that this person will go in one of two directions in life. Either they can become a brilliant and successful person in any field of business, or they'll become a criminal mastermind. Right? They actually said that about him. And he said that when he was young, he was just engaged in all kinds of criminal activity. But he got out of it. Right? He changed his life around, and he's an incredibly successful person in many respects. So you could look at it and say he changed his life. No, he didn't change his life. He changed the way in which he tried to fulfill his need. The same need, a different mode of fulfillment. So that need for success recognition, instead of going for it through the mode of ignorance, through criminal activity, he tried to go for it through a higher mode. And that is what every single individual is doing. Every single one of us are trying to fulfill the same needs, the same fundamental needs. But different people are just trying to fulfill those same needs in different ways, in different modes. Now, when we try to fulfill those needs in a higher way, that brings us ultimately to this request from Dhruva Maharaj. What is this point? He's asking for unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that he's trying to fulfill his need, not in the mode of ignorance, not in the mode of passion, not even in the mode of goodness. This is what happens when you try to fulfill your needs in Shuddhasattva. When the living entity comes to the point where they understand Vasudeva Sarvam Iti Sur Mahatma Sadula Baha, that Vasudeva Krishna is everything, then we take to pure devotional service and we try to fulfill that need. What is that need? There's a pastime in the Puranas. One queen asked the king, what is that one need? That one need that no living entity can do without. And the king goes into meditation, and when he comes out of meditation, his response is that one need that no living entity can do without is a need to give and to receive love. That is directly stated in the Shastra. The underlying fundamental drive for every single living entity, without any exception, is actually the need to give and to receive love. So when Dhruva Maharaj is asking for this unflinching faith, faith is a very powerful thing. In Sanskrit, we say Shraddha. That word Shraddha, it has two components. The first part, Shraddha, it comes actually from the word Hrid. It's the same root as in Hridaya. And Hridaya means what? It means the heart. And the prefix, the last part of the word, actually refers to shelter. So the word Shraddha, Shraddha means that place where your heart finds shelter. And it's something that you cannot fake. This is what we were talking about earlier. We live our lives unconsciously. If you ask people what they have faith in, they will tell you so many things. If you look who and what they take shelter of, that's what they have faith in. Right? Whatever a person takes shelter of consistently, that indicates where their faith lies. They may say so many different things. Oh yeah, I have faith in this or that. You know, for example, you have some countries and they'll say, in God we trust, right? They don't trust God. Yeah, all their time and energy is spent doing something different. But they'll say, in God we trust. But if you look to see what the individual takes shelter of, that indicates deep down in their consciousness, this is what the individual has faith in. Jiva Goswami is explained in the... let's put it another way. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It says that there's four types of people who come to Krishna, right? Those who come out of distress, those who are after wealth, those who are inquisitive, and those who come out of knowledge. And all of them are considered to be, the term that's used is Sukratino, right? Those are pious. They're considered all to be pious individuals. Why are they pious individuals? Right? It's not because they're distressed. Many people are distressed. It's not because they are wanting some wealth or some, you know, money, resources. Everyone wants that. They're not pious because they're inquisitive. And they're not pious because they want some, they are coming out of knowledge. The reason why they're pious is because they've turned to Krishna for it. You understand? That's what it means, Sukratino. Specifically, what it means is that they have some Sukrati, they have some devotional credit. And because they have devotional credit, they have faith in God, consciously or unconsciously. So when they want something, they go to God for it. You see the point? That's actually what it means. Those four people, it means that they have some faith. And Krishna will later on, in the same Bhagavad Gita, Namam Duskritina Mudha, Prapadyante Naradama, Maya Pratigyana Asurim Bhavamashritaha. He also speaks about four people. He says that they never come to me. Why? Because they don't have any faith in me. So the mission of this Krishna consciousness movement is to encourage people, to help people to understand and to see what? To see that everything that you want, everything that you need, if you want it and you want it in its eternal supply, you better go to God. That's what we're all about. You want it, having needs is not an issue. Needs are natural. That's what it means to be a living entity. What we need to talk about is where do you go to get your needs met? Yeah. There was a story of a king. And the king decided one day that I will give benedictions to every single member of my kingdom. So the king sent his servants throughout the kingdom to ask everyone, what would you like from the king? You can have anything. He will give each and every one of you a particular benediction. What do you want? So different people would ask for different things. Some would ask for wealth. Some would ask for, fame. Some would ask for different things. There was one brahmana in the kingdom, and the king's servants approached the brahmana. And they said, my dear sir, the king has said that he will give a benediction to every single member of the kingdom. What would you like? This brahmana was very thoughtful and very intelligent. So he told the servants, I would just like the king to come and visit me. And the servants were a bit confused. They said, but let me just make sure we're clear. The king has said he will give any benediction that you request. Let me make it very clear. Are you sure this is what you want? You just want him to visit you. And the brahmana said again, he said, yeah, all I would like is that the king should come and visit me. So the servants thought this was not a very thoughtful or intelligent request, but they said, okay, it's your choice. They went to the king and they were making all these arrangements, and they told the king, said, but there's this one person in your kingdom. And we told him that you'll give him anything he wants, etc. But he said that he just wants you to come and visit him. And even the king was perplexed. He said, okay, he can have anything he wants, but if this is all he requests, okay. So the king said, okay, so prepare for me to visit. Let's prepare to go and visit. So the king's servants and the ministers, they considered, okay, so the king's going to visit this brahmana, this poor brahmana. The king is used to traveling in very beautiful, scenic environments. So what we're going to need to do is make the path from the palace to the house of the Brahmana very beautiful, very scenic, very, you know, attractive, you know, because that's what the king's used to, and he should have the best. So they changed the entire journey, the entire path. They redid the entire area to make it very beautiful. And then they thought, when the king gets to the Brahmana's house, he might be thirsty or hungry. So we need to make sure that in the Brahmana's house, there's the finest foods, the finest drinks, just so that the king has a huge selection and he can have anything to quench his thirst and anything to eat if he desires it. And then they follow up, well, the king is used to being in beautiful palatial environments. So we will need to also reconstruct the Brahmana's house to make sure it's of the standard that the king is used to. So they made all of these changes just in recognition that the king is going to visit this Brahmana. So the Brahmana was actually considered to be the most intelligent. He understood that if he requests a visit from the king, everything else that comes along with that will be given. And this is exactly the same reason why Dhruva Maharaj here is requesting unflinching faith and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because one who has unflinching faith in Krishna and is always remembering Krishna, for that person, Krishna is always there. He is always there, and Krishna doesn't come alone. When Krishna is there, Krishna comes with his associates, and he comes with his energies. So that is what it means to be thoughtful and really intelligent. Therefore, the most intelligent people on the entire planet are those people who are in the endeavor to learn to serve and please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Because this entire material world has one purpose. What is it? What is that verse? After many lifetimes, Vasudeva Savamiti Sura Mahatma Sadulaba. Yeah. Exactly. After many lifetimes, we come to understand that Krishna is everything. That is actually the conclusion of being in the material world. After many lifetimes of being in this material world, we develop a sufficient, or through blessings, and usually a mixture of both, we develop sufficient intelligence to understand, hold on, what is the purpose of life? Why am I here? How is it that I have these anti-material desires? I don't just want love. I want love that will last forever, right? You hear that in the songs, right? People, they're looking for an everlasting love, a love that will last forever. I have this longing in my heart for a love affair that's going to last forever and that will be completely satisfying with tremendous intensity, variety, adventure to it. Where does this transcendental desire come from? It comes from my original relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm looking for a love affair that will last forever. And that is what is given in the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. That is the actual life of Krishna consciousness. A love affair that will last forever. And in this engaging in devotional service with unflinching faith and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are always experiencing Krishna, always with Krishna. Even in this mood of separation, one feels the Lord's presence even more, because in the mood of separation, the intensity of the emotions become even more powerful. So, The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the soundtrack of spiritual experience. Just like when you don't do this, but when there's a movie that's released in Hollywood, the movie comes along with a soundtrack. And what the soundtrack does is it brings out all of the key elements of the movie, actually. So the Maha Mantra is the soundtrack of spiritual existence. And by chanting that Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with feeling and with sincerity, it brings out all of the spiritual emotions of spiritual experience. The name brings out the rupa, the form of the Lord. The rupa accentuates the guna, the qualities of the Lord, and all of these are in dynamic expression in the leela of the Lord. And therefore, this movement and this lifestyle is very esoteric. Why? Because the devotees in Lord Chaitanya's mission, the devotees in the mission of Srila Prabhupada, you and your lives are the unfolding of Lord Chaitanya's leela on the planet at this time. So the Hare Krishna movement is an extension of the pastimes of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu on the planet at this very point in time. Therefore, Prabhupada says this movement will go down in history as being the movement that saved the entire world. How does this work practically? It goes back to this original point, need. We don't deny needs. I was even seeing that the devotees in the movement who really do well, they do well because they found a transcendental way to fulfill the needs. And the opposite is also true. When people go into a low ebb or when they fall away, it's because their needs were not being met. So Krishna consciousness means to deal with the real and the ideal. The real is where am I right now and what are my real needs? And the ideal is as I engage those needs in devotional service, they become purified and refined to the point that all you need is Krishna. In the pure sense. And this is what you see here with Dhruva Maharaj. If I can just remember you, Krishna, and if I can just have unflinching faith in you, everything is taken care of. So we encourage you to be real and to be ideal. And what bridges this gap is the language of needs. It's very, very powerful for us as devotees when we recognize our needs and live our lives in such a way that those needs are being met so that we can make this progressive journey to pure devotion. To pure devotion. So certain aspects of our lives are directly in Shuddha Sattva. When we engage in the hearing and the chanting, all of these are pure devotional activities, right? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc. And then there'll be other things that we may deal with. We may deal with occupations. We may deal with all kinds of things. But try to deal with them in such a way that your needs are being met so that you can come to this platform of pure devotion throughout your entire life. I remember, and we'll end on this point, a class that was given by His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj in London, and it was Radhastami, 1999. And he was making the point that he feels that pretty much every single devotee who comes to this movement has it within them to make it all the way back home, back to Godhead. He said, but in some cases we fail. He said, I don't think that the devotees get the chanting wrong. That was an interesting point. He said, often, because the devotees are not correctly situated, so that their needs are being consistently met, he said, therefore their minds are not peaceful, therefore the chanting becomes difficult. The real and the ideal. So we can think of Krishna consciousness as a marathon, not a sprint. So we want to have a situation where our entire life ultimately can be offered to the Supreme and to experience this intense love affair. This intense love affair. Okay. So I'm over time. I just want to make a quick point because, although I've gone over time, today is a very auspicious day for a number of reasons. And one of them is that this is Vasant Panchami. Okay, so it's the beginning of the spring season. It's a very auspicious day for new beginnings. And actually, and I know that Gauranga Prabhu, I'm sure, will speak about this in the class that was announced for this evening. It's a very auspicious day because we have the appearance of so many wonderful personalities. I'll just read through. So we have today appearance of Srimati Vishnu Priya Devi. It is Sarasvati Puja today. It is the disappearance of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It is, let's see, disappearance of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Actually, no, it's his appearance day, sorry. It is Raghunandan Thakur's appearance, Pundarik Vidyanidhi's appearance, Raghunandan Thakur's appearance, and the appearance of Raghunath Das Goswami. So, just very briefly, what we'll point out is that on the appearance or disappearance day of great Vaishnavas, their blessings and their mercy is more accessible. And in this wonderful manifestation of Vrindavan that we have in this Govardhan eco village, you will find the samadhis of so many great personalities. And we encourage you today, if you get a moment, to go to their samadhis, or at least internally go to their samadhis, in prayer and in recognition of their wonderful offerings to the world. Because every time such great personalities come upon the planet, they come to express their compassion for the living entities and to demonstrate their love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They also come to give the example for all of us as to the goal of life. And as we said, the goal of life, prema pumata mahan, the goal of life and the very reason for existence. The very reason for existence is this love affair. Okay, so Krishna's given me a call to stop. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jani Tagore Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Questions and comments, or should we stop there? Yeah? Okay. Any comments or questions briefly? Maybe we'll just say one or two. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for a very intelligent and thoughtful class.
Thank you.
Prabhu, this is a very nice point that you mentioned about recognizing individual needs. If you look at the general Vedic narrative, the emphasis, because the Vedic society was based on dharma, the emphasis was on a sense of duty. That's the narrative that you hear often.
Yes.
And in the modern individualism being like the number one dharma, you know, the word need can sometimes be misunderstood.
Yes.
In our spiritual narratives, how do we bridge that gap between the need narrative and the duty and dharma narrative?
Okay, it's a very good question. I was thinking about this a lot. Our rights are someone else's responsibilities. Okay? For example, when the child is growing up, they have a right for shelter, they have a need for shelter, affection, care, protection, guidance. Their needs are the responsibilities of the parents. So what has happened in modern society is that there's been a breakdown. So one group are just demanding their needs be met, but they don't take care of their responsibilities. Another group are talking all about responsibilities, but if you don't take care of your needs, you won't be able to continue to do your responsibilities either. The two things are inherently connected. You can't have one without the other. So even when we talk about dharma, the reason why we can talk about dharma is only if someone else is doing what they're meant to do. For example, it talks about how we should surrender to our seniors. But it also says the seniors should protect and guide and care for those people who surrender to them. You see? So you sometimes see in modern society, people try and emphasize one thing without the other, and it doesn't work. Because we are all interconnected. You see? We can surrender to our authorities because they are giving us care and shelter. You see, otherwise it breaks down. If someone surrenders to their seniors, but the seniors do not provide care and shelter, the surrender will not last. You see? And at the same time, if the seniors provide care and shelter, the people who are juniors should surrender to them. So the way it works properly, and the way it will work in a lasting way, is two things. The emphasis for me as a person, I should think about doing what I'm meant to do. It's very easy to point to everyone else and say they're not doing their job properly. But the question should be, am I doing my job properly? And what happens is very powerful. If I do my job properly, by me doing my job properly, it will do the most to inspire other people to do their job properly. And then everything will come up. If I just demand everyone should look after me, look, you should look after me. I'm not getting the care that I need. Okay, that may be real, but am I giving care? So many times in human society, people talk about relationships and they'll say, you know, people aren't loving. But the question is, am I loving? I was reading a book by my spiritual master, Spiritual Warrior 2, and he made a point in that book. He said, you will sometimes see people who receive a lot of love and affection from others. He said, if you look carefully at that person's life, you'll see that the people who receive a lot of love and care and affection from others are usually the ones who give love. Because they're giving love, therefore it comes back to them. So the way it works is, first and foremost, am I doing what I'm meant to be doing? First, let me do my duty. Let me give what I'm meant to give. And along with that, let me try and arrange my life so my needs are being taken care of as well, so that I can continue to give. You see, so that's how it the output is service. I'm taking care of my needs in a Krishna conscious way so that I can continue to serve. So the end point is still bhakti, right? And because everything I'm doing is to assist me in being a better servant, it all becomes spiritualized in that process. And if I do that, I set a powerful example, because I set the example of helping other people to see, yes, you may have needs, but we don't just spend our lives demanding that our needs be met. That's not what we're talking about here. What I'm talking about is, how can I be a responsible person? How can I arrange my life properly so that I can continue to give to Prabhupada's mission and to serve sincerely the entire body of devotees, the humanity, and ultimately, first and foremost, serve them in a way that will please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there has to be that synergy. It's not one or the other. But for us, for myself, the emphasis on me doing what I'm meant to be doing, right? So I want to arrange my life so that I can care for the other devotees properly. Even a very simple example is Varnashram, right? So, you know, we give class, right? So if I learn and if I digest the teachings, then I can share that with other people. So if I do what I'm meant to be doing, it can then inspire people to do what they're meant to be doing. And that's how all of these things fit together. And if we just focus on what everyone else is meant to be doing, the whole thing breaks down. Because then the example that I set is, I'm always a victim. I'm not getting love. You know, people aren't nice to me. I'm not getting this. I'm not getting that. And if everyone acts that same way, everyone else is just a victim and no one's taking responsibility, everything goes to hell. So the emphasis for me is, what should I be doing? Right? There's not enough love in the environment. Okay, let me be the one to set the example. Let me be the one to actually give love. There's not proper leadership. Okay, let me be the one to lead properly. Or at least to inspire those who have the nature to lead properly. So I should focus on my responsibilities. And if I do that, automatically I generate and inspire in other people the reciprocation, which is the needs being met. Make sense? Okay. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Janita Gopramanandi. Hari Hari Bol.